Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. This is how we know that we live in him and he in us. He has given us of his Spirit. And we have seen and testify that the Father has sent his Son to be the Savior of the world. If anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God. And so we know and rely on the love that God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them. This is how love is made complete among us, so that when we have confidence on the day of judgment, in this world we are like Jesus. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. We love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister, whom they have seen, cannot love God, whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command: anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister.
I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourself to be my disciples.
I was thinking yesterday, and earlier this week, as I was looking at this passage, that I've been a Christian for 35 years, and it's funny how over-familiar you can get with certain stories or passages or images from Scripture. And this is one for me, definitely, where I think, oh, I know that one. I don't know if others feel, oh, I know that one. I know what this one is all about. And somehow, because of my over-familiarity, it's like I lose the impact, perhaps, it had on the people who heard it for the first time. So as I was writing my sermon, I tried to just almost pause to kind of say, what was the impact? What was the big take-home message from this? And I've come up with four words that I'm going to take us through. The four words that I want to explore this morning are crop, credit, collective, and connected. You don't often get a four-point sermon with the words beginning with the same letter from me, so I'm feeling old school this morning. Crop, credits, collective, and connected. Next week after our morning service, we have a plant swap happening, organised by our Eco Church Working Group. And the idea is that you are someone who is green-fingered, you can bring along any spare plants that you have. Say, for example, if you have planted seeds this spring, or if you have house plants that are prolific in producing baby plants. And then rather than those going to waste because you have surplus, they can be swapped or they can just be given away to others who can enjoy them and benefit from them. It's a great idea. So if you are green fingered and you have plants to share, do bring them along next week. Now, if next week I took home a young tomato plant, the purpose of that plant would be to produce tomatoes. It's obvious the clue is in the name. It's a tomato plant. If I spend several months feeding it and watering it and checking it's in the right position and has enough sunlight and protecting it from pests, my expectation will be that it will produce a crop of tomatoes. If it fails to produce any tomatoes, then it hasn't fulfilled its purpose, because I won't be growing a tomato plant as a decorative plant for its flowers. Clue is in the name, I'm growing it for its tomatoes. And in terms of today's passage from John 15, I have to say that I have sometimes, as both a reader of the Bible and a preacher, found myself getting lost in the allegory and overanalyzing, well, what might it mean to be pruned and how are we pruned, or who might be the unfruitful branches, or what is the fire into which the unfruitful branches are thrown? And that's fine. And actually, sometimes that is useful to try and dig into the Bible and think a bit further. But it also risks just getting mired in the detail and missing the fundamental point, which is that as Christians, we are like a tomato plant. We are meant to be fruitful and to produce a crop. If we don't, then we haven't fulfilled our purpose. It is as simple as that. Like I say, I've taken the image of a tomato plant instead, but a tomato plant without tomatoes is pointless. Christians in a church without bearing fruit is pointless. We haven't fulfilled our purpose. That is like the big message of this passage. Tomato plant, no tomatoes, game over. So whether your image is grapes or tomatoes, the point is, we are meant to be fruitful. We are meant to be fruitful. And if we are not being fruitful, then we are not doing the things that we are supposed to do as Christians. One could actually argue, is it possible to have an unfruitful Christian? If you are actually a Christian and not fruitful, then is that even an oxymoron? So if there's no crop, the harvest has failed. So then the question becomes for us, well, what is the fruit that we are meant to produce? And again, when I looked at the passage, I found a really simple answer in verse 8. It says, "This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples." So according to that verse, there are two aspects of fruitfulness. The first is that we're meant to look like disciples of Jesus, and the second is that we are supposed to glorify God. So again, I don't know about other people, sometimes I find myself getting lost in church language. Oh yeah, disciples, we're meant to be disciples. Oh yeah, we're meant to glorify God. And then if someone says, well, what do those two things mean? I go, just give me a minute, everybody. Maybe the rest of you are more erudite as theologians, but these words trip off our tongues and we sort of stop thinking about what they mean. I think for me, to be a disciple means that we put Jesus' words into action. We live by his teaching in such a way that we show other people something of the nature and the character of God by the way that we behave, operate, our attitudes, our words. So we are communicating, this is God by our very being. Don't forget that this passage here comes in the extended narrative from John 13 to 17, all of which takes place in the context of the Last Supper. The drawback of just dropping into a bit of the Bible like this is that you forget, oh yeah, in chapter 13, Jesus washed his disciples' feet. In the context of this evening, that was probably 45 minutes ago. And then at the end of this, he's going to go out to the Mount of Olives where he'll be arrested. And then we're into the final hours before his death. So before Jesus talks to them about the importance of fruitfulness, he washes their feet and he commands them to follow his example and to wash one another's feet. That's probably why it says in verse 3, you are already clean. The word clean can also mean pruned. You are already clean. You are already pruned because of the word I've spoken to you. In other words, in the context of this conversation, how do we bear fruit? We do what Jesus tells us to do. We follow his example and we serve others. We follow his example and we serve others. So that takes us to the second part of verse 8, which is that idea of glorifying God, glorifying the Father. Now, imagine for a moment that next Sunday afternoon, I invite you to come and have tea in the vicarage garden just up the road. That's not something we tend to do because we have a 38 kilo dog who is completely bonkers. And let's just say it ruins the afternoon tea in the vicarage garden vibe. But if you were to come to the vicarage garden and if you admired our garden and you said, well, isn't this lovely? You've cultivated some stunning weeds over there and the dog has dug a beautiful hole over there. I would have to say, well, I can't take credit for this garden. All the glory has to go to my husband because he is the person who looks after it. It is his hard work. There is something there about, we know there is nothing worse than one person taking credit for another person's work. And I think that's what this phrase about glorifying God is. It's about, where does the credit go for the good and beautiful things that we're seeing? And if we follow the example of Jesus, if we reflect the character of God by following Jesus' teaching, then the credit for that behavior comes not to us, but actually goes to God, because it is God's character we are reflecting, and it is Jesus' teaching we're putting into practice. He is the one who is behind it, so the glory goes to him. Like I say, like me in the garden, I wouldn't say, well, I can't take credit, all the glory goes to my husband. It is the same. If we are living as Christians, I can't take the credit, all the glory goes to God, because all of this comes from God. I'm merely a poor reflection. So we're not meant to produce a crop just for the sake of producing a crop. I definitely grew up in the kind of churches where the idea was I should just be as sort of moral and virtuous as possible because I should be as a Christian and frankly, I should look good. I feel like it isn't just an end in itself. The point is that we are pointing people beyond us. It is not about us. We are pointing them to the nature of God, God's creativity, goodness, beauty, God's moral character. If a farmer plants a crop, it is the farmer who is seeking to profit from it. So we are not meant to get the credit ourselves. God gets the credit. So those are my first two words. The idea that we're there to produce a crop, that's our whole point, that's what we're here for. And the second is that God is to get the credit from that crop because the crop is a reflection of who God is. The third word I've picked out is collective, and this comes less from me going through the verses of the Bible and more me thinking about the experience of being a farmer who has planted a crop of grapes. Some of you will know that in my spare time, I'm doing an MA course in something called Pioneer Ministry, which is basically about creative and innovative approaches to church and mission. And this week we had an online lecture from a Malawian academic who was talking about what Christian leaders can learn from African spirituality. And he talked about the idea of Ubuntu, which means personhood. It's often better known by people in the West by the phrase Ubuntu, which is the South African translation. And it's a notion that is common to the Bantu people, which is around 400 ethnic groups in Central and Southern Africa. And the idea of Ubuntu is that to be a person is to live in harmony with yourself, with the community of which you're a part, with God, with nature, and with the spirit world. And if you are not seeking the flourishing or the well-being of those others, then you are not fully human. I suppose we might say, no man, no person can be an island. You have to be only exist in relationship to those others. In my view, it's a very similar concept to the idea of Jesus talking about the greatest commandments being to love God and to love your neighbor as you love yourself, those multiple dimensions of relationship. But if you think about that idea of that thinking relationally and you apply it to what is happening in this passage, it means that we would all be concerned not just with our own individual flourishing and fruitfulness, but we'd be concerned with the fruitfulness of one another too. And again, I feel I was raised as a Christian to be, well, quite honestly, if I'm all right, Jack, that's all right. As in, if I'm a good Christian, that's fine. Everybody else, you know, it's over to you. But actually, our purpose as a church, as a collection of Christians, is to produce a crop and to bear fruit. But if only some of the vines bear fruit, that will affect the grape harvest, which will ultimately affect the amount of wine that can be produced. So the idea of Ubuntu encourages us to think collectively. We are all the branches, or we are all the vines. And if we want a bumper harvest, then we need to ensure that we are all fruitful. In fact, the idea of Ubuntu would say that if you are not thinking about the flourishing of your fellow Christians, then you can't be truly fruitful yourself, because you can't have one without the other. So we need to have a collective mindset that is focused on all of us flourishing, so that we can all produce a crop, so that God the vintner gets the credit for the bumper harvest and the vintage wine. So there is something there about thinking not just about how am I doing with God, how am I living out my faith, but just starting to think about the person next to me, the person in front of me, the person behind me. How are we doing? How are we living out our faith? What might they be finding hard? What might they be modeling to me? What can I learn from them? I like what they do. How could I be like them? So that focus shifts just from me and God to us and God. Because as I say, what's the point of me producing lovely grapes if everybody else has produced mean small sour grapes? Well, it's pointless. Then how is that any use to the farmer who is actually wanting to produce as much wine as possible? If we are invested in the crop, if we're invested in the production of wine, then we have to, by extension of logic, be invested in one another being fruitful. My final word is connected, because pretty obviously all of this is only possible if we are connected to God. Or to borrow other biblical language, if we remain in him or abide in him. I was reflecting, they're interesting words because they sound quite passive, to remain or abide. And yet what is happening is the opposite of passive, because life is surging through us and causing us to grow and bear fruit. Now, if I, in my vineyard, severed a root at its vine, it's a vine at its roots, it is not going to flourish and bear fruit. It is ultimately going to die. It's not the kind of plant where you can just say, I'll cut it off at the roots and it's all good, it'll still bear fruit. It will no longer be able to draw up water and nutrients from the soil. So then I suppose the question for us is, what is feeding us? And what is giving us life? And what is connecting us to the Creator and keeping us rooted in God? I don't think there is a correct answer to that question. I have to say I spent years as a younger Christian feeling that I had to be like the other Christians around me. I had to pray for as long as they prayed, or as using as long words. I had to understand the Bible with the same insight that they do. Perhaps I had to do something like have a regular pattern of fasting, or be more generous, or be better at sitting still and meditating, or maybe I should be in a small group or run a small group, or you could go on and on. Actually, all of those things are really good and positive things, and they may be some things that for you think that is the thing that keeps me rooted to God. But fundamentally, it's not about the activity, it's about the purpose of that activity, which is connection. And there is a real piece of work to do to learn for each of us what helps me to be connected to God, and to really notice that, and then have the confidence to pursue that, even if you think, I feel a little bit weird as a Christian that lying on a yoga mat doing deep breathing keeps me connected to God. Yes, when I feel like, as I'm a vicar, I should say extended Bible study keeps me connected to God. Lying on a yoga mat, breathing deeply keeps me connected to God. How interesting. It takes a long time to have the courage to own that, and then also to explore those other things too. Extended Bible study in order to write a sermon keeps me connected to God. Extended Bible study without a sermon, I mean, my brain is like all over the place. So find what feeds you. Notice what keeps you spiritually alive. Notice the times where you feel, I feel in touch with God through this. Don't worry so much about other people, but find the thing that helps you stay connected and deeply rooted into God. So those are my four words for this week. The idea of crop, that fundamentally, a tomato plant without tomatoes is completely pointless. That's what we're here for, people, to produce tomatoes. So we need to be all about the fruit and the crop. And that is that we are living like Jesus. And then secondly, that the credit for that is not for us because we're such great Christians, but we point past us and we point to God. The third is this idea of collective mindset, where it's all well and good if I can produce that fruit, but I should be interested if I am truly fruitful in our fruitfulness. And then the final thing is having the courage to stay connected so that we can receive all of that life that comes from God and then extend it to others. Crop, credit, collective and connected. I hope for you, one of those things this morning is the thing that sticks with you. And if nothing else, just remember, a tomato plant without tomatoes is pointless.